I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. When some surfers get in too deep with drug smugglers, the waves threaten to pull them under, and a shooting by transit police causes controversy in a rip from the headlines tale. This hour, we'll look at these films and more as our indie, foreign, and documentary film critics take a look at what's showing on area screens. So jump in with a Bangkok crime family, navigate life after success has faded with a playwright, Pastor Prime, and join a teen misfit on his summer vacation. It's Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Here's a film I think you'll enjoy, The Way, Way Back, a coming-of-age story about a teen misfit who's saved by a summer job. The film features Steve Carell in a role very different from the one he played on TV's The Office. It's a film with heart, and the big question is whether our art, independent, and foreign film critics liked it. We're about to find out as we review that film and a whole bunch more this morning. Our critics are film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, always good to have you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
KCUR's own Steve Walker. Steven, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks.
And Bob Butler's here. He's a longtime film critic for The Star who now works at the Kansas City Public Library. You can see and read his reviews at butlerscinemascene.com. Bob, how are you?
Doing great.
Now, I've heard you guys talk more and more recently about the fact that when you screen a film that you will later offer a critique of on our show or anywhere else, that you're doing it not so much sitting in the movie theater and enjoying it in that kind of environment, but you're actually doing it from the comfort of your own home, watching it on a computer. Bob, do I have that right?
You have it right.
You know, this
money. Money, money, money. It used to be that a film distributor would rent a theater and show virtually every movie to us. Nowadays, simply not the case anymore, and it's all about money. Renting a theater costs money, and now it's just easier. It used to be they'd send out a DVD, and you'd watch it on your TV. Even that's too expensive for them now. Now it's a download. You watch it, you stream it.
Bob, I remember reading one time that someone said looking at a work of art in a coffee table book is comparable to watching...
What a great analogy.
Yeah, to watching a movie on your computer.
Yeah.
If you think about all the time and effort and creativity involved in creating those images up there, it really is a shame that that's how we're going to see movies in the future. And I've also read that filmmakers are changing the way they're shooting films, that there are more close-ups, that there aren't so many wide-angle shots anymore, so that people can, when they're standing in line, can watch these movies on their cell phones. I mean,
you've got to be kidding me.
It's got to be hanging up there in a wall, whether it's a museum or a gallery or whatever. And I feel the same way about watching a movie. I really want to see it on the big screen.
Stephen, what do you make of this?
Well, not only is the quality of the film compromised by us, by me, sitting in my office at home in a chair watching it on my computer screen.
My email
flashes up and down through some of it. There's on loan to Steve Walker and all this other garbage around the screen. So it's distracting. But, some of the movies, I mean, I watched three last weekend. I have one to watch. I watched a couple this week, one this weekend. It's just how independent films and docs are getting to us.
And I know this is a sign of my own age, but the last thing I want to do is spend more time in front of the computer at the end of a long week.
Well,
we all spend our weeks in front of a computer. I want to go somewhere else, you know?
I'll tell you, though, at the end of the day at my real job, I'm really pooped. And we did a 7-week summer camp with 30 kids, and I had no interest in going to a theater. And a couple of nights, I would have a glass of wine and sit in front of my computer, and that was perfect.
Well, there's an aesthetic thing here. Watching a film on your television or on a computer is a little bit like swimming with your clothes on. And the experience, you have to filter through that. When I'm watching a film on my computer, I have to keep telling myself the flaws are going to be hidden. the good things are going to be muted. It's just the opposite in a theater where the only thing in front of you is the movie. There's no escape. There, the bad stuff is really bad, but the good stuff is really great.
And I can't imagine filmmakers are happy about this at all.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, we've talked many times on this program about what this means for the future of the movie theater. What's the latest? What does it mean for the future of movie theaters?
I just read that there's a movie opening today, a video on demand or pay-per-view, and opening in theaters August 23rd. And I'm going, wait a minute.
So it's flipped. It's going to the
and
pay-per-view first.
Theater owners have to be furious.
Which title
about
is that?
I can't remember, Steve. But
from the distributor's point of view, however, you've got a little independent movie. You know you're not going to make much in the theaters. But on pay-per-view, you can probably make more than you ever will from ticket sales.
And you're not going to make it selling DVDs anymore either. That's out the window.
Pay-per-view is picking up really quickly. You know, I'll watch one every couple of weeks myself.
And yet, as we've seen in our own market here, there are more and more movie theaters opening all the time.
Well,
are
I don't know if this is a good business model or not.
Well,
I mean, one of them is making money through their restaurant standees. And it's just, oh, by the way, we happen to have a couple of screens here where we're showing some good movies.
And but they are terrific theaters. And these are the new ones in Prairie Village,
by the way.
They're
right.
Absolutely terrific
Very
theaters.
Nice theaters. Yeah. But, not the best grilled cheese sandwich I've ever had in my life. But
but it's
I've heard good things about them, actually. Okay.
If you send back a grilled cheese sandwich, what is that? Sorry.
But I really feel for the Tivoli and Jerry there and Brian at Glenwood Arts. I just thank them all the time for bringing to us the kinds of really good movies that are shown in major cities, and we have a chance to see them in movie theaters.
Right. And here's the companies that are doing the streaming on computer. The Weinstein Company is doing that. They'll screen things that they think have – a lot of potential.
They screened The Artist last year because clearly that was going to go places.
Right, right. Magnolia Pictures, big distributor of indies. Everything from them lately I've watched on my computer. Sony Pictures Classics is holding out and made us. I mean, I was thrilled to see Almodovar's new movie on the big Glenwood screen.
But even there, there's a catch. The screening rep told us it had to be screened during the day because the company wouldn't spring for the money to show it at night. Theater rentals are higher.
Right.
That means if the critics are working, they can't give up their day job just to go see a movie. As nice a thought as that is.
Yeah. I thought you were a filet mignon guy, not just a grilled cheese sandwich. Maybe you're just too cheap for your own.
Oh, filet mignon. Yeah, I misunderstood.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on to some films that are opening here. I'm so excited, Steve Walker. It's a film about – tell us about the film.
Well, it's the new film from Pedro Almodovar, who is Spain's most famous, best director. He's been making movies for, 2.5 decades now?
Yeah, at least.
He's made some brilliant films like All About My Mother and Volver, and the list goes on. I'm So Excited is a frothy, light, 90-minute, filthy comedy set on an airplane, completely in business class, because the stewards have drugged all the people in economy class so they don't have to deal with them. That's funny. And so the three stewards working business class are three very flamboyant gay men who are back and forth with the pilot. Everyone's drinking. Everyone's talking about oral sex. Everyone's after each other's whatever.
You could have called this flight attendants on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
That's very funny.
Because the plane has a big problem, mechanical, and no one knows if they're going to land safely or not. Which
so
is,
that's why they're having a good time.
That's one reason why they drugged everybody, so they don't have to deal with panic.
Panicked
flyers. You know what? I found this movie to be kind of good, dirty fun.
Mm-hmm. It's smutty earlier is a good word. It's very smutty.
And have you ever seen the John Wayne movie, The High and the Mighty?
Oh, my God. What a reference
that. No, but The High and the Mighty was this movie in the early 50s about a transoceanic liner that is running out of fuel or something. And all the passengers have different stories which come to the fore as they're, examining their fate. Same thing here. You've got a dominatrix who looks like Anna Wintour of Vogue fame.
Right.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, that's Cecilia Roth, who was the star of All About My Mother.
You've got a Mexican hitman who looks like Frank Zappa. Go figure.
Right.
You've got a woman psychic who wants to lose her virginity before it's all over. It's goofy. It's silly. And the ultimate here's what's really funny about it. Almodovar basically is saying, when the chips are down, we're all queer. Think about it. Everybody in this movie, even the pilots, suddenly decide that, you know, that's the way to go.
Well, did you like story it? My 40s,
I laughed myself silly. I thought, I know it's bottom drawer Almodovar. It's still fun.
I wonder if it's an homage in a way to the movies like that, movies like Airport.
Yeah.
These really, you know, star-studded films from this earlier era where the whole thing takes place.
Did you like it?
Oh, yeah. I had a smile on my face the entire time.
Well, that's
but I didn't put it on my 3 to see only because it's so light. It's so insubstantial, but it's fun.
Oh, and I've never seen a jet airliner fetishized so beautifully in this loving photography.
It's beautifully
shot. Think about the shape of a jetliner and then, you know, extrapolate.
Professor Haynes wants the floor here.
All right.
Unfortunately, I couldn't go to that afternoon screening. I really, really wanted to see this movie, but I understand Penelope Cruz is in it, Steve.
Well, there's a reason to go.
Right there.
Well,
for about 5 seconds.
Two of Pedro's... The people he made big stars, Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas, have a very short scene right at the first 3-4 minutes.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Cynthia.
Just want to drop a couple of names here. I was at one of those Critics' Choice Movie Awards program, and I was walking up. Martin Scorsese was sitting at a table, and I started to talk to him. And all of a sudden, I saw Pedro Almodovar walking toward him, and I sort of stood there and stopped, and Scorsese jumped up, and Pedro says, Martin, I'm not going to imitate his accent. But
oh,
he said,
ahead and do it.
No. But he said, I love your movies. You're the greatest filmmaker of all. And Scorsese goes, no. I love your movies. You make the best movies. So two great filmmakers, but I've always enjoyed his films, and I'm looking forward to seeing him. I'm so excited.
Two pretty good thumbs up for I'm so excited. Steve Walker, let's turn to Drift, an Australian film about surfing brothers, like big wave surfing.
Surfing
right?
Brothers, right, like on water.
Yeah, like that kind of surfing, yeah.
Well, this little film comes out of nowhere. Is opening on one screen at the AMC Independence.
Hmm.
We got wind of it, and sent a streaming version to watch a big surf movie. But anyway, it's set in the 70s. Apparently, there were two brothers, the Kelly brothers, who both surfed and opened a surf shop and eventually competed in a huge surfing competition. What can I say? Sam Worthington's the only name in it, really. He's from Avatar, obviously.
And from the 1970s, too.
Well, he was born there.
But yeah.
He plays a kind of a bohemian drifter guy who lives on the beach. And the brothers have some conflict about a woman from Hawaii who's living in this town. The first 5 minutes, I thought, oh, this is going to be really interesting, are in black and white, and it's set when the boys are little and mom's leaving a very abusive husband and takes the boys in the car, and dad's chasing. He doesn't make the car. He doesn't make that connection, so she gets away. They stop in this surf town, and the little boys come out and look and go, we want to live here.
Hmm.
And she lets them. So they have a nice relationship. We have a clip. It's conversation between the older brother, who's just opened a surf shop on their property, and the young woman he's interested in, and then his younger brother, who also kind of has eyes on her, comes into the scene.
This is from Drift.
Oh, hey.
How's it going? Settling in okay?
You know, just getting my bearings.
What, all two streets? You in the market for a new stick?
Oh, maybe. I really just came to see Jimmy Setup. See what all the hype's about.
Oh, Jimmy Setup, is that right?
Come on, mate. I am head shaper.
Well, you're the only shaper. I get him to put the bins out, you know, sweep up, that kind of thing. Keeps him off the streets.
Don't worry about him. Reckons he told me everything I know.
Oh, I did, mate. Just not everything I know. Big difference.
We're going to check out the canyons later. Think it'll handle the big stuff?
Why don't you borrow it and find out?
Oh, no, I couldn't do that. Wouldn't feel comfortable.
Why not? You know your way around a wave?
Go for it. You're not going to steal it.
Promise you'll pick it up whenever you need to?
Scout's honor.
Their budget was pretty low. They got the rights to one Creedence song, and then they shot their budget on the music, so everything else is that fake.
Did you like it?
Mm, there's not much to like.
I'm not sensing a lot of enthusiasm.
No, there's not much to like. I mean, they want to surf. They open a surf shop. There's a drug dealer in town. They owe something to him. Then this competition comes because I think the filmmaker and the writer figured we got to end this movie with something.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty meandering and pretty little.
Rapid Robert, what'd you think?
Never saw it.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This speaks to if we don't communicate with each other, Bob, Cynthia, and I during the week, I got a link. I sent it to Cynthia. I assumed Bob would get it, and he didn't. So that's okay. Thus, I'm the only one who saw it.
So for the film.
It's so
Drift.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Canyons.
Well, this is interesting. The film isn't playing anywhere right now. It's on demand. What makes it interesting is that, several reasons. First, if you're one of those people that has been really desperate to see Lindsay Lohan naked, here you go. Second, it's a film from Paul Schrader, a really interesting filmmaker who's had lots of ups and downs. He co-wrote Taxi Driver, and he's made films like Affliction and Mishima, some really great stuff.
Hardcore.
He made this film on a literal shoestring, largely with Lindsay Lohan serving as his producer. Now, it's based on a Bret Easton Ellis novel, which is to say that the characters are all soulless and their jobs are all soulless, and they live in a city that's basically soulless. This is about
Los Angeles.
Yeah. These are about four characters. There's a guy named James Dean. Yeah.
D-E-E-N.
Right. He's a porn star, and he plays the lead character, basically, who is a trust fund kid who dabbles in making movies. His live-in girlfriend is played by Lindsay Lohan. His assistant's boyfriend has been hired to play a role in this upcoming horror film, and unbeknownst to James Dean, his girlfriend and his assistant's boyfriend are having an affair behind his back. But then everybody in this movie seems to be having an affair with somebody else, and it's the most joyless sex you ever saw in your life.
Mm.
My problem is not with the film, which is pretty well acted, especially from a guy who's a porn star. I didn't expect that at all. Yeah.
Mm.
My problem is that Bret Easton, and on a shoestring, this looks great. My problem is that Bret Easton Ellis keeps mining the same depressing, no hope material. And once you've seen American Psycho or any of these,
so what's new? Yeah.
Yeah, what's new? I don't understand why.
Well, forewarned people, this is coming out without a rating because there's some hardcore pornography in it, basically.
You know what? I don't really think there is. I mean, let's put it this way, we've had full frontal female. This is some full frontal male, but it's not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it hardcore.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a softcore. How about that?
Good enough.
I think it's interesting to note it was $250,000 was the budget raised on Kickstarter.
Really?
So this is what's happening. Now, it says something that a filmmaker of Paul Schrader's stature can't get funding, even $250,000, to make a movie.
You're
that
taking
he has
the
to
words
go
out of my mouth. Why would the co-writer of the classic film Taxi wind up in a situation where $250,000 is his budget?
Might have something to do with the script and the fact that people saw Lindsay Lohan was connected and she's so unpredictable and has issues.
And
so
blousy. And this is a dreadful movie. And I just want to say that people have been, during Lindsay Lohan's troubles, people would say, oh, but she's a good, you know, I'm pulling for her. She's really a great actress. I think her brain has been addled enough that she is not good in this movie. The acting is dreadful.
So absolutely not for the Canyons from Steve Walker. Bob, you're giving.
Well, I'm not going to tell you should go see it. I think if you do see it, it won't be quite as painful as Steve thinks. But
what's more fun is the New York Times Magazine story on it about 6 months ago that was tongue in cheek, looking at a new film being made. But given what we've said about it, it's a very interesting art.
Did you catch the cameo with Gus Van Sant?
Oh, he did. Yeah.
He plays a psychiatrist in the film because that lead character has some issues.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films here on Up to Date. How about Fruitvale Station, Bob Butler?
I think it's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Based on the true story of Oscar Grant, a 22-year-old African-American man who, while handcuffed, was shot to death in 2009 by an Oakland policeman.
Yeah, he was coming back on New Year's Day early in the morning from watching fireworks in San Francisco with his friends. Ryan Coogler's movie, to me, is one of the really great first movies I've seen in an awful long time. It takes the story of this individual, Oscar, and it goes back 24 hours and basically follows him in the last 24 hours of his life leading up to this shooting, which the cops claimed was accidental. The cop that did it said he was reaching for his taser and got his 45 instead.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Anyway, what makes this fantastic is, first, a breakout performance by a guy named Michael B. Jordan. You may have seen him on Friday Night Lights. You may
the
have
Wire.
Seen him in The Wire, Parenthood. He's been really great, and he is tremendous in this. Secondly, Coogler has made a movie that is about this one young man, troubled life, but he's a sweet guy. He's got a girlfriend he lives with and a young daughter that he absolutely adores, but in many regards, he's sort of feckless. He's lost his job at the supermarket for showing up late. So he's a very mixed bag of things, good and bad.
He has a record.
He has a record, yeah. He was actually in jail for dealing marijuana at one time. Mm-hmm. What makes this really interesting to me is that I think Coogler is trying to not only depict one man's life, but to depict a way of living that is endemic, which is people who are barely getting along from paycheck to paycheck, who can't afford to turn down a double shift,
right,
even because it's the night of their mother's birthday. But even so, you got to work. You don't want to hack off the boss. You don't want to lose that money. People who have no security emotionally or economically at all. There's a wonderful scene in here. Maybe I'm stretching. On the way back from San Francisco, Oscar and his friends, the train has stopped underground, the BART train, and everybody's kind of bored, but they're still, in party mode. Someone turns on a boombox, and the entire car of white people, black people, start booging around this car. And it struck me that this is what John Ford would always do in his westerns. He would have a square dance, the entire town would turn out, and it was a way for communities to come together and unite. And I think that's kind of what this guy's trying to do with this movie here. Maybe I'm casting too wide a net.
But you love this film, it sounds like.
I love this film.
It's not a perfect film. It's a little uneven. But I just can't get over Michael B. Jordan's performance. There is a scene in there when he's in prison and the wonderful actress Octavia Spencer plays his mom. She shows up. Another inmate disses his mother in front of him, and to see the anger on his face, the transformation just in his face when he's just getting ready to stand up and beat this guy to a pulp is just incredible acting to me. And there were some very touching moments. I think the filmmaker, who's only 27 years old, has a great future in filmmaking.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it.
I will say that with the Trayvon Martin case being fresh in the news, this film opens with an actual cell phone footage of the shooting. And you hear the passengers watching going, "No, stop it. What are you doing?" And then we go back 24 hours and watch the build up to that.
A day in the life.
So I expected this movie better pay off big time to start the film with the actual murder of this kid. And I don't think it does. I think it's pretty amateurish. Octavia Spencer and Michael Jordan are very good. I will give you that. I think the movie ends in the car. We happen to have in the very same subway car this white girl that he met earlier in and had a conversation with in a grocery store, the guy who provoked his mother in the prison, and people who've shown up throughout the film all seem to somehow
wind up in the same
converge
train.
In the same.
That's a bit of piling on, yeah.
Yeah. And I was just like, well, that, I'm losing more and more belief in this film as those kinds of things continue.
So do you recommend it or not, Stephen?
That's a good question.
I'm full of them.
That's up to date.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's about something. Yeah, I would recommend it.
I would recommend it.
Way up, way
okay.
up.
Okay, all right. That again, that film is titled, we have a clip here from Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, I believe this is with Michael Jordan talking to his little daughter.
I'm scared.
Scared of what?
I hear guns outside.
You know what, baby? Those just firecrackers. You're safe inside with your cousins.
What about you, Daddy?
Me? Maybe I'm gonna be fine. I'll tell you what, though. When we wake up in the morning, we're gonna play Candyland. And then guess what we're gonna do after that?
Go to the park?
Better.
Toys R Us?
Way better than that.
Why?
I don't know, maybe Chuck E. Cheese?
Really?
I promise. Daddy's gonna give you heck of tokens and we're gonna play all the games, okay? And then we're gonna get your favorite pizza and we're gonna eat it all up. Even mommy's, because she can't have carbs.
What's a carb?
You ain't gotta worry about that right now. I love you.
I love you too, Daddy.
And of course, we know what's going to happen to him just later that day.
This is a world where a trip to Chuck E. Cheese is a big deal.
Yeah, the emphasis is not on the good guy necessarily. I mean, there's a whole range of moments in the film where he is not the good guy, and so you get sort of a fleshed out character in this movie, which I thought the filmmaker did a good job doing.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation with our documentary foreign and art film critics here. We'll get to other films in our second half, Hijacking, The Way, Way Back, which I just really liked, and the film Only God Forgives. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about the cost of treating autism, you can find that in our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Well, stepping in front of 30 kids to try and get them to learn can be intimidating. Monday on the show, we'll talk with some second-year teachers about what they learned last year, and we'll look at some fruits and vegetables and which ones are most likely to retain pesticides. That's Monday on the show. This hour, our art, independent, and foreign film critics are here, Bob Butler, Steve Walker, and Cynthia Haynes. Let's keep marching on here and turn to a film, Bob Butler, titled Hijacking. It's a Danish drama about a cargo ship hijacked by Somali pirates in the Indian Ocean.
This is a story that we keep reading about periodically in the newspaper. This movie from Tobias Lindholm is what you'd call a docudrama, which is that it tries to be absolutely scrupulously realistic in depicting what's going on. We see most of what happens on the ship through the eyes of the ship's cook, a character played by Pilu Özbak, and he's sort of a dumpy fat guy with a girlfriend and a girl back in, and a daughter back in Denmark. He's looking forward to getting home, and boy, doesn't happen. He's on the ship for. He and his fellow crewmen are on there for 4 months as hostages, and the conditions range from okay to miserable. For instance, they're locked in a cabin and not allowed to use the bathroom for several days. You can imagine what kind of situation that entails. The fascinating thing about this movie, from my point of view, is the performance of Søren Malling as the Danish president of the shipping firm who takes it in his hands, against the advice of the experts, to do the negotiations with the hijackers on the phone himself. And what makes this And interesting is that corporate CEOs are generally portrayed in the movies as really slimy characters. This is a guy who you've already seen. He's a brilliant negotiator who is capable of, tearing apart the opposition to get the deal he wants. In this instance, his temptation is to immediately acquiesce to the hijackers and get his guys out of this situation. But he's told that if you do that, they'll say, well, thank you. That's the down payment. Now let's talk about the real one. So he has to go on for 4 months on the phone every day with these people, trying to come across with some sort of deal that is going to get his people out of there. And it isn't even about the money. It's about ensuring their safety. But it goes on and on. Go ahead.
Well, just listening to that description, you're thinking, how can it retain any kind of intensity? It did. I mean, this filmmaker is really brilliant. A lot of handheld work, which I'm not a big fan of, but it works in this instance. And as I agree with you, the performances by the two actors is really amazing. But it gave us sort of a human side to this horrific
situation
that we've read about and heard about for a very, very long time.
We've got a clip here that I believe is the cook and his boss in Copenhagen talking over the telephone. Now, it's in English because the pirates demand that all negotiations be in English because they don't speak Danish, and this way they can monitor what's going on.
I think this is between the CEO and
the hostage takers. Okay.
Yeah. This is from Hijacking.
Listen, Omar, I want to talk to you about the crew because we heard the captain was ill.
Peter, let me stop you right there. I don't want to talk about the captain or the crew. Maybe if you make me a better offer, then I can talk to you about it. But right now, I want to talk about the money.
Uma, can I be honest with you? I think that $12 million is way off the market price for a vessel like Rosen. I, I, I think that we need to go under $5 million. I repeat, we need to go under $5 million before we can talk serious.
Okay, listen, Peter. I won't talk to them, but you need to take this guy seriously.
I do. No, of course not. I take this very serious, and I think you are very professional, all of you.
You know what, Peter? Don't do that to me again. You know, I'm not a pirate. I'm not one of them. Don't talk to me like I'm one of them. I'm not a pirate.
Unfortunately, this movie was playing at the Tivoli until last night. So we're urging, we all loved it, and are urging people to watch for it, either on demand or
somewhere else.
Somewhere else, maybe Amazon, I don't know. I just want to add, you talked about the tension. What ratchets up that tension is how we see day 25, day 39.
Day 140.
Well, let me get to that point. Day 67, they finally are let out of the kitchen and can get some fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene is like this hull of this ship opens up and it's like we're there getting sun on it. Day 119, one of the people back at the corporate office says, we can't rush them. Time is a Western thing. And day 127, there a couple of them are going stir crazy. And this movie is about not only these hostage negotiations, but it's about class. To me, it's got all these corporate CEOs whose big worries are that they're sweating out shirts during the day while their employees are starving
And the question is, what's the value of a human life? I mean, really are confronted with that at the end of the movie.
It's really quite good.
So you all liked it?
Yeah.
Okay, again, that film, very high marks for Hijacking. Okay. How about one other film, a film I liked. It's nothing deep and particularly doesn't stretch the mind too much, but I enjoyed it. The Way, Way Back, Cynthia Haynes.
Well, this
a coming-of-age comedy about a teen misfit who's saved by a summer job, basically. Yeah.
It's the kind of summer movie you expect with Steve Carell, Allison Janney. There have been other movies, Adventureland. If you like this one, Steve, I suggest Adventureland with Jesse Eisenberg. Similar situation where a guy works in an amusement park and sort of comes of age and grows up. This film,
a rare film I could take my wife and my 15-year-old to go see.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This movie was written, directed, and co-starring a guy named Nat Faxon and also Jim Rash. And they both won Oscars for their screenplay of The Descendants. It's based on a novel, and the title is significant, I think, to only people who remember station wagons that had the seat that faced the opposite direction.
Yeah, right.
And that's also
– I used to love that seat.
I'm a veteran of the way, way back seats
because you were a troubled child.
Well, okay. Yeah.
But it also creates a very interesting tension and situation within the automobile. So you can actually see the face of this young kid suffering as he has conversations with Steve Carell's nasty character. He's the kid's mom's new boyfriend.
He's not the guy from The Office.
Oh, no.
Right. And you're looking at him through the rearview mirror, and then you're looking at this kid who just so incredibly insecure. And he's played by Liam James, who was in The Killing, and he plays 14-year-old Duncan, and he's well cast in that. He really is. And Toni Collette has received some Rotten Tomato hits for her performances.
Are you kidding? I thought she was great.
I thought she was great
playing
too.
An insecure woman who's like clinging to this man, even though it's costing her own kid.
She was wonderful in it, actually.
But for me, the star of this film is Sam Rockwell. He plays this eccentric water park manager.
Yes.
The park's called the Water Whiz.
The Water Whiz.
And he imparts words of wisdom to Duncan, and it's so charming whenever he's on the screen. And he does a good job of modulating his performance. I mean, he can just be a total goofball, but then he's hypersensitive to this young man who is just terribly, terribly insecure.
This is sort of a distillation of every Sam Rockwell role, you know,
because he always
plays the goofball who has more substance than you expected.
And I'll tell you what, the parts of it I didn't like. The whole metaphor about the water slide and passing each other is all a little heavy-handed for me, but...
Oh, whatever.
I'm here on the show to talk about it.
No,
kind of films.
Yeah.
But if Oscars would really seriously reward comedic performances, I would want to see Sam Rockwell nominated and Allison Janney, who
yes.
made me laugh, and every one of her lines oh, made me laugh.
She's from the West Wing,
yeah.
and
yes.
the opening scene where she's introduced to the carload of a family coming in is absolutely
She's the drunken next-door neighbor uh-huh. lady who is always on the cruising for a man and a tan and a good martini.
And who's starting to slur her words at about noon and always has a drink in her hand. She's hilarious.
You know, one actress I thought was wasted in this film was Maya Rudolph, also from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, she didn't have
really
much to do.
Much of her. It's like, why are you here?
Yeah. See, if you could be a film critic. That's a very good observation.
There's a 10-second critique. I leave the rest
absolutely
to you guys.
Absolutely agree with you about Maya Rudolph. I really expected more out of her.
By the way, the directors and writers, Faxon and Reich, they do appear in the movie. One of them is the operator of the big slide, a goofy surfer-type guy.
Oh, is that
and
who they
the
were?
Other
I
one,
didn't know
the
that.
Other one yeah. plays one of the concessionaires, a hypochondriac who keeps claiming he's going to leave and get a real job somewhere but never does.
We have a clip here, Cynthia Haynes.
Yes, and it's Allison Janney's character and Steve Carell's character reuniting at the summer beach cottage.
Okay, from the way, way back.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Thank God! Another night of drinking alone, I was going to kill myself.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm off the wagon again.
Uh-huh.
Accept it and move on. Oh, my God, press my laundry. Oh, Trent.
How you doing?
I'm good, like this.
Thanks.
Love your ride. Does the A-Track still work?
What, this? This is exactly the car my dad used to drive us in.
Huh, old and crappy.
She's hilarious. She says things
that is a terrific scene.
Yeah, she says things to her daughter and that are just horrible. You cannot believe they're coming out of her mouth. And her teenage daughter, who kind of strikes up a friendship with this kid, knows it. I mean, she's lived with this mother. And she's just kind of whatever.
She tolerates her.
Yeah.
But she's wise.
So moms and dads, you can take your teenage kids to this film and everybody can have a good time.
Oh, by the way, you will never drink in front of your children again after watching
well,
this movie.
That's right.
And I did add it to my 3 to see, although I hadn't for the last 2 weeks, because I just remember how much I laugh, you know, and everything doesn't have to be a serious slog through.
You know what's interesting about this film is that you've seen everything in it before, and yet it works completely.
Yes. It does
That's
work.
Exactly
it
right.
does work.
That's exactly
yeah.
right. So
yeah.
We all liked it.
I did.
Like.
I did like it.
That's the way, way back. Okay. Let's move on here to Only God Forgives. Steve Walker.
Oh, boy.
An American drug dealer in Bangkok's underworld compelled by his mother to seek revenge for his brother's death.
Right. This is directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, who directed Drive, which was my favorite movie of the year 2 years ago. A brilliant film that upset every formula of a chase movie that there could be. And here he's reteamed with Ryan Gosling, who plays Julian, who runs a Thai boxing club, and he's a drug smuggler. His brother Billy butchers a prostitute. And to seek revenge, in comes his mother, played gargoylishly by Kristin Scott Thomas, who I love.
Hmm.
But she said she channeled it about on Donatella Versace.
Whoa.
She's a
and
piece
Cher.
Of work.
and Barbara Streisand.
Who in one scene talks about her children, the size of her son's junk. And so she's compelling Julian to go kill the guy who killed
his
Billy.
Brother. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I hated this movie.
Mm.
It's exceedingly violent. So is Drive, but Drive had a purpose. This movie has no purpose. And in fact, the director said, whenever I found a formula that's brought me success, my first instinct is to tear it all down for the sheer fact of making sure I don't do it again. The chief enemy of creativity is being safe with good taste.
Well,
this movie
he pushed
is,
the limits
is
with
so
this
bad.
One, yeah.
Did you see it?
Yes.
You did see it. Well, let me hear. We haven't talked about this.
Yeah.
One.
No, I absolutely agree. It was. I hate to say it was beautifully shot. The cinematography
is
eerie. It's similar to a David Lynch film, but not nearly at that level. In terms of the music and the cinematography, I mean, you're kind of supposed to be entering this netherworld that's created by Refn, and I just was so put off. By it. And Kristin Scott Thomas, an actress I love.
I love her.
I mean, it was a joke in terms of the kind of performance and character that she created for this mother. I mean, all the Oedipal stuff. I mean, it just very disturbing film.
It's
it
very
really
disturbing.
Is.
It's pointless. It's grotesque.
Robert, and any other thoughts here?
I haven't seen it. Although
well,
you know, it's one of these films that I have kind of on my list that I think you're going to have to just because of the stink around it. But
yeah, there's a lot of stink around it. And Gosling, who is also always watchable here, is playing almost a parody of the silent anti-hero.
Yeah.
He has about three lines of dialogue. Other than that, he's just brooding and taking hits to the face. And it's a complete waste of time.
So no thank you to Only God Forgives. Okay. Steve Walker, you also want to talk about a film, Fill the Void, an Israeli film about an 18-year-old Hasidic girl who's pressured to marry her late sister's widower.
Right. This is a film from Tel Aviv about a very Orthodox Jewish family. One of the daughters is getting married. She dies. They've been married, and she dies in childbirth. And so they want to marry her younger sister off to the widower. And this is a world, you know, the great thing about foreign films is that you get to enter these worlds that you would never have access to, an invitation into. And this is one of those films. It's been on my three to see since the week it opened. What's cool and interesting about it is that the daughter is, this first scene is her and her mother checking out some young men in a grocery store within their Hasidic community. And so, you know, she's thinking, okay, I get to have some choice and some say in my life. And then when her sister dies, she realizes that tradition rules in the individual choice.
Mm.
It's very interesting and really well done. And what's interesting, given some of the cultural issues within a community like this, it's directed and written by a woman, which I found really novel.
So very high marks.
Very high marks.
Fill the Void.
It's playing at one of the Glenwood theaters and has been for about a month.
Okay. Well, we have all kinds of events coming up here. You are listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films. Now showing Steve Walker, Cynthia Haynes, Bob Butler are all here with us, and lots of stuff, lots of things to talk about in terms of different movie-related events going on around town. Robert,
well,
roll.
I'm going to – Cynthia here is a resident of beautiful Lawrence. What happened 150 years ago this month in Lawrence, Cynthia?
Well, there was some dude named Quantrill who rode through and burned the town down.
Exactly.
I was going to say the Free State Brewery, but maybe wrong.
No, down at the library, we have something that I like to call Quantrillapalooza. It's a celebration in August of not a celebration. That's kind of cruel. An observation of the historical realities. Several of these are movie-related. For instance, on Sunday, August 18th at 2 p.m. at the Downtown Library, John Tibbetts, our colleague from KU, is going to be doing a presentation, Quantrill in the Movies. He's going to go through all the movies that Quantrill has been a figure in, including Ride with the Devil, which was made in Kansas City about 12 years ago by Ang Lee. You mentioned something about Quantrill being such an overwhelming figure in Kansas history.
Unbelievable. More movies have been made about Quantrill than about any other historical figure. And I've done a lot of research on that subject, and that's a fact.
Crazy sell.
Wow.
Crazy sell.
That was a big deal.
And to complement that, on Mondays at 6:30 this month, we're doing Quantrill movies. We're showing Kansas Raiders, Quantrill's Raiders, Ride with the Devil, and then sort of a stretch, but nonetheless, The Outlaw, Josie Wales, which starts out in the Civil War with the Red Legs and the Jayhawkers.
I can't recommend that one enough. What a great, fun film to see. Yeah.
And if you happen to own the box set of Have Gun, Will Travel, there's an episode where a history teacher says that there's two sides to every story, including the Civil War and Quantrill's raid, and so she's threatened by townspeople who consider Quantrill a hero. Yeah. And guess who comes to their to her rescue?
A man called Paladin.
Have Gun, Will Travel.
There you go. What else from the library?
Well, who knew that it was Romance Awareness Month?
I did not. But thanks for reminding me.
So Saturdays at 1:30, we're showing romantic movies. We're showing Brief Encounters, Stairway to Heaven, The Apartment, Letter from an Unknown Woman, and the one to end them all, Casablanca. Come on down and check them out. We call this series Give Us a Kiss.
Okay. And the Tivoli's got some stuff going on. Who wants to talk about that, Cynthia?
Now, this is one of the things that Jerry's doing at the Tivoli is providing these opportunities to see amazing opera, to see amazing theater. Well, fortunately, I mean, I was encouraged all along the way that I better go see the audience.
Encouraged by me
and Kim.
I sat next to when I saw it.
This is Helen Mirren.
Yes, it is fantastic. And I saw it in the middle of the week on early in the afternoon. The place was virtually packed.
And what is it?
It is a stage production of Helen Mirren playing the Queen, which she does so well, and an interaction with her various prime ministers over history. And it's a history lesson. It's entertaining. Her performance is brilliant. It is great fun, and it's showing
one more time
this Sunday at 1:30 at the Tivoli.
And if you can get in, no one could get in to see this film when it was playing in the West End in London. It was sold out every night. And what's also fascinating, it's written by the guy who wrote The Queen and wrote Frost Nixon,
right?
Peter Morgan. It doesn't tell the story in a chronological fashion. It opens with which prime minister? Kim, help me if you can remember.
She's thinking.
Majors?
Here she comes.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I sat next to her, so I got a little lesson on the side throughout the film, which was very pleasant. So then it goes to her older and then younger, and some of these changes happen on stage. I mean, theatrically, it's just stunning.
There's no makeup change or anything like that?
No.
Wigs, yes.
There's
they
wigs,
change wigs.
Wigs
they
and
change
clothes.
Wigs, yeah.
I've got to go see that.
It's one more performance. It's been such a huge hit for the Tivoli, and I saw Jerry the other day, and I said, I couldn't be happy for you, because this is – and I've talked about these plays on the screen before, starting with Danny Boyle's Frankenstein, which is coming back. They're going to bring back some of their biggest hits. And if you haven't done one of these –
it's worth your time.
So this is a live production we're going to be seeing.
It's not live.
Anymore.
It was live when it was filmed.
Okay. All right.
And they have a nice little chat at interval with Peter Morgan. And if the interval is their intermission in England, it's timed exactly to what the audience's interval is. So it's in high def. It's like you're sitting in the 10th row. It's an amazing experience, and the audience is stellar.
Well, coming up is Morrissey 25 Live, and that will be Thursday, August the 29th at 7 p.m.
And what is that?
At the Tivoli, and it's more a concert that you'll have an opportunity to see.
Morrissey was the lead singer with the Smiths,
one of the
seminal kind of punk-ish 80s bands, yeah.
And then the New York Philharmonic, New York City Ballet, A Dancer's Dream, Thursday, September 12th, Sunday, September 15th. I just suggest you go to the Tivoli's website and take a look at all of these wonderful opportunities you're going to have to see.
And this is the
performance.
Future.
We're talking about what's going to save theaters.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to save theaters.
Helping the Tivoli up a great deal. Another thing that's coming this fall is Kenneth Branagh doing Macbeth from the Manchester Theater Festival, which was reviewed in the New York Times last week, and it's set in the setting is not a theater, but a tiny old church. The floor is dirt that gets wet, and it's just this another incredibly theatrical kind of way of looking at an old story, but you're seeing it as if you're right there.
Yeah.
Can't recommend it enough.
Great fun. Absolutely terrific.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a phone call here about the audience from Marlene from Overland Park. Marlene, good morning.
Good morning. I saw the audience last week and was completely entranced. And I had two questions. Why Tony Blair wasn't portrayed, although he was sort of alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got snookered into seeing Red 2 the next night.
With Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren must have needed the money.
Yeah.
Or something, because that movie was so bad.
I was wondering why Tony Blair wasn't depicted either, and I asked Kim, and she knows. She's waving her hands at us.
And here she comes.
Okay.
I believe she wasn't depicted because...
You mean Tony Blair.
Wasn't depicted because he has been referred to so many times. He was depicted in The Queen a lot.
Okay.
So they thought it would just be redundant.
Hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And the corgis are in it. The corgis are in it, which is so much fun.
But I can't recommend the movie enough.
All right. Thank you very much, Marlene. Appreciate
thank you.
Yeah. How about, what else, the Alamo Draft House, Main Street?
They have something called Film School on tomorrow's afternoon, The Passion of Joan of Arc. And check out drafthouse.com/Kansas City.
I'm not sure that's a movie you want to see with a beer in your hand. But,
no.
But, what is film school, Cynthia?
I'm really not certain, but I'm assuming there's
film classics.
Film classics, and maybe an opportunity to talk about them.
Well, if you haven't seen The Passion of Joan of Arc, it is one of the greatest films ever. No questions about it. So
now we're
going
to drop down a few rungs here. Why? I don't know. But Before Midnight has been re-released. It's opening again.
And
this
I'll have another
Friday.
Chance not to go see it.
Okay. We have some good movies 30, coming up.
30 seconds left. Just tick off a few you're looking forward to.
Art.
Blue Jasmine is the best reviewed Woody Allen film in years. And
really?
With Kate Blanchett already being touted as she's going to certainly win an Oscar for this troubled, drunken, disheveled woman who used to be rich, who goes to her sister's house in San Francisco, a la Streetcar Named Desire.
Right. Okay, if each of you have three movies to recommend to go see this weekend, you would recommend what, Cynthia?
20 Feet from Stardom. Contiki opens at Liberty Hall. It's a wonderful adventure film, and I got to suggest Mud again. It's hung around all summer long. Worth seeing.
Fill the Void, The Way, Way Back, and 20 Feet from Stardom.
Fruitvale Station. I'm going to say... Way, Way Back. And Hijacking, look it up on video.
Find
pay for
it.
Video.
You'll find it. Or bootleg it. We're not saying that.
Steve, Bob, and Cynthia's free to see will be on our website, kcur.org. Well, Monday on the show, stepping in front of 30 kids to try and get them to learn can be intimidating. We'll talk with some second-year teachers about what they learned last year and look at which fruits and veggies are most likely to retain pesticides, stuff you've got to know about. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Sangeeta Shastri. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.